The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bazong.
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 Bazong. Bazong. Bazong. Bazong. Bazong.
This is Bizarre, the Bizarre and Weird Official Podcast with me, your host, Mr. Frank. Hey, Zongers, welcome back to the big show. Once again, we're going to do what we do here on the Bizarre. Glad you're tuning in to find out what we're up to this time around. And before we get into what's going on this time around, we have to acknowledge the fine folks at Subculture Courses and Clothing who make Bazong and all the podcasts on the Project Entertainment Network possible. And of course, I'm talking Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Zongers, you can visit them on the web at www.subculturecorsets.com or visit their store if you're in the Jacksonville, Florida area. They're just off I-95 at the Avenues Mall. And of course, Subculture Corsets has the best, most unique clothing that includes gothic, pinup, steampunk, alternative, and of course, corsets. Lots of high quality steel boned corsets for you to check out. It's the fall, and the fall con season is upon us, as we are about to find out. So in order to look your best and your standout most unique, you need to go to subculturecorsets.com and seek out an outfit that is unique for you, Zongers. And I'm going to help you out to find that outfit and make it possible by giving you the following code of Bizong at checkout. If you put that in, you'll receive 10% off your entire order, either in store or online at www.subculturecorsets.com. So shop until you drop, Zongers, because the more you buy, the more you save. It ain't off just one item. That 10% off comes off your entire purchase. The more you buy, the more you're going to save at subculturecorsets.com. And hey, there's no excuses for anybody not to shop there, because they carry sizes 4 through 4X, and they have men's clothing, and they have shoes and accessories as well. So there's something for everyone at Subculture Corsets. Make sure you visit them and support the sponsors who support this network, subculturecorsets.com. And thanks to subculturecorsets.com, we can talk about what I did this weekend. It's become a theme lately. I've noticed every time I've done a convention or sort of a book signing, it always seems to happen on a Sunday, and I wind up talking about it. So like, this is like now officially, this is just what Mr. Frank does on Bazong. This weekend, I spent at the second New Jersey Horror Convention. The first one happened back in April, so this is a quick turnaround for a horror convention, not a year apart. And we went back. People who follow me know, I do a lot of book signings and events with authors Chuck Buddha and Tim Meyer, to name a few, but they're like the core group. So we were at the New Jersey Horror Convention, and I decided we're just going to do a con recap for Bazong here at the New Jersey Horror Convention. Lots of cool stuff here. I always say, like, Bazong is like my writer school. So, like, talking cons, that's like, you know, getting in the trenches and doing the do and selling them books. So I love doing a con wrap up to talk shop and talk about what worked, maybe what didn't work, and just all the fun goofiness we have. That's why I have on returning. I've had them on each individually. We're going to have Chuck Buddha and Tim Meyer on to talk about the New Jersey Horror Convention that happened Woodbridge, New Jersey, this past weekend. We're going to talk about all the good stuff, all the stuff we think's working, all the stuff we don't think's working, and all the fun we had. So, with that in mind, Zongers, it's time to give us the gong. I'd like to welcome back not one but two guests who are both making their return to Bazong. And of course, neither of them is really technically Bazong writers, but it's okay because they're both fucking weird. I should know because I just spent 3 days in a row with them at the New Jersey Horror Con. So I'd like to welcome back to Bazong this week one and only my compatriots in bookselling, Mr. Tim Meyer and Mr. Chuck Buddha. Welcome to Bazong.
Yo.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Chuck and Tim both been single guests on the show, and like I said, we just spent the weekend at the New Jersey Horror Con in Woodbridge, New Jersey, selling our books and taking in all the sights. I'm going to best qualify this as a bizarre thing because our table was two tables down from Troma, so we saw a lot of weird shit.
Yeah, this morning was the best. When Mr. Kabuki Man was singing Rick Astley tunes, and what else did he sing? He sang something else. It was pretty funny.
He sang Don't You Forget About Me and some other song as well. Maybe the Pet Shop Boys. I don't know. It was all good. It was good Troma karaoke today. So that's where
I missed all that.
You did miss all that, Tim, and we'll get around to all that. But I missed the first day. So I always do. It seems just every time I do a con or something, I wind up doing a wrap up on the show. So I figured it'd be cool to have you guys on to help me out with the second New Jersey Horror Con wrap up here today. Let's start out. Chuck, for you, we'll ask you, how'd the con go for you?
It went pretty well. It definitely went better than the first time around. The venue was infinitesimally, no, that's the wrong, that's making it sound small. It was exponentially better than the first venue, which was a crappy, dumpy hotel. And this one was very nice, and it was well maintained, very clean, and it was very organized. So I liked where our table was placed, and had a lot of good foot traffic. We had celebrities behind us, so that brought people. And of course, the great Lloyd Kaufman and the Troma team was probably about 10 feet from us, and they're always fantastic people to party with and hang out and also be near during a con, because they draw a lot of attention. So good time.
Good stuff. Tim, for you, did you have a similar positive feelings about the second New Jersey Horror Con?
Oh yeah, I had a fantastic time. Like Chuck said, that this convention center or hotel, whatever you want to call it, was much better. There were no leaky ceilings, which was good, because the last time we got a little wet. And yeah, we had great neighbors. Everyone who attended the con was really awesome. And I had a great time.
Agreed. Definitely, it was a good time. You guys got to start out on Friday. I missed out on Friday night. The kickoff of the con, how would you categorize the traffic there?
Yeah, I would say it was definitely, you know, usual Friday night, in that it's a little bit slower because people come home from work, you know, on a Friday, and it's a long week, and they probably want to have dinner with their family and stuff. But it was better than the last time. So we had more foot traffic, and we logged some sales in on Friday night, which was also a bonus.
Indeed. Tim, I got to ask you, this is the second New Jersey Horror Con in, what is it? Has it been like maybe 7 months at best? The first one, the kickoff, the inaugural one, was in April that we first did. And now, now we're into September. It seems pretty quick for a con. Do you think the timing was right, or maybe they should make it more of an annual thing?
I think it was right. I mean, it was like two totally different cons, though. I mean, they had better celebrities at this con. Like we mentioned earlier, the hotel was a lot better. I think it was a good time for it. And plus, I think fall, and since we're nearing the Halloween season, it was just a better choice to have it around this time than back in April. So yeah, I think it was a good choice on their part to do it at this time.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering what their play was, if they were maybe trying to shift the New Jersey Horror Con to a fall con, as opposed to a spring con, and just jumped on that right away by changing venues and trying to maintain the momentum they did build from the first one, or if they are thinking of maybe like presenting themselves as like a Monster Mania type of convention where it does happen multiple times a year. So it'd be interesting to see what their play is. I'm kind of impressed so far. Like, out of the gate, they did really well. In case people don't know, and are familiar with watching Comic Book Men, there's the guy who runs the New Jersey Horror Con is Rob Bruce, who shows up from time to time on Comic Book Men. And anybody who knows who that is knows he's like a pop culture guy. He's all into collectibles and toys and shit like that. So he seems to have you know, for a convention that's out the door, he has really good connections. He can get celebrities really well. I mean, he's got pretty exceptional celebrities at both of them for a con that's coming out the gate. And the vendors seem to be pretty robust and very, very, there's a lot of variety in the vendors. It's not like a lot of the same stuff. So I think overall for a new con, he's doing well there. It's just, it'll be interesting to see what his play is from here on out, if he's going to do it multiple times a year or is he just trying to move it to a fall con.
Yeah, I think he's trying to maybe do it twice a year, like the Monster Mania. That's what I would, that would be my guess.
It might be a hard institution to, you know, to go up against, though. And in a way, I guess it's kind of good, you know, to drum up the competition and try to steal some of the thunder of the other side. But at the same time, you know, you may just want to be consistent and do one con a year and kind of nail it down before you stretch to twice a year. So I'm not sure if the goal was really to do it twice a year or if they just wanted to. I think my guess is they wanted to pick up on the momentum and also kind of do better, you know, without letting too much time go in between with what happened the first time with the hotel. So
it's true. I also wonder too, for me, I mean, none of us are like have been big con goers essentially until, you know, more recently. And like you have the Monster Manias out there. I know as a vendor, it's a bigger investment to get a table at Monster Mania just because it's a bigger and more notorious convention as opposed to New Jersey Horror Con. But, you know, it feels good, the New Jersey Horror Con, because outside of, yeah, you have your Monster Manias and Chillers and stuff like that. But it did seem in our area, in New Jersey, it was a little lacking as opposed to other areas who have cons come through a lot more. Even have the Walker Stalker happen, but those things are like humongous. And New Jersey Horror Con to me feels a little more intimate, maybe a little more accessible to not your everyday con goer, your hardcore con goers. Do you kind of get that feeling, Chuck?
Yeah, I would say so. And you see that in the clientele that come through. I mean, we had everything from senior citizens who come through on their motorized vehicle or via their cane, and or you have some young people who were coming in, you know, that the parents were either carrying them or they were in strollers and stuff. So, you know, it's a wide range of people coming through. And what I was really impressed about this time around was that we didn't get the neck breakage that we had at the first HorrorCon, where it was almost like people walked past and once they saw authors with books, they would snap their neck so hard to look the other way, even though there was nothing but a wall on the other side of us, rather than look at us because they were afraid we were going to sell them a book. And this time, people actually browsed. They came up and they, you know, Frank, they loved your book covers, you know, whether it was The Shocker or Brats in Hell and Death Gets a Book. Especially on Sunday, we had a lot of people stop by and pick it up and laugh and, you know, ask about it and what's this about and this is wild. And yeah, it was a good time.
Tim, I got to ask you, I noticed this time around as opposed to the first time, I mean, pure books selling going on. There was us, there was a gentleman behind us who just had like a zombie series out and that's really all he had. And maybe like the weird New Jersey table, you can kind of consider like published work. But out of that, I didn't see, maybe there was one other one outside of that. But it seemed like there was a lesser presence this year or this time around, the second time around than the first time of books. Do you think that was true? And do you think that is a result of some of the bumps and like Chuck had just mentioned, that neck snapping that went on the first time that, I mean, the first time I'll say, Chuck and Tim had a separate table completely in a different area from me. I had my own table, but we were both exactly experiencing that neck snapping, that look away real quick. I don't want nothing to do with books. did you think there's that change from the first one that maybe booksellers maybe shied away this time?
Yeah, I definitely noticed a lack of authors at this convention than the one back in April. I did notice walking around the floor a couple of comic book writers and artists, so I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, definitely not as many as last time, and I don't know why that is. I know that Baltimore Comic Con was also this weekend, which is draws a bigger crowd, mm-hmm. so maybe some authors took their stuff and went down there because it's not too far from us. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what actually caused that, but definitely better sales this year than last year. Because I sold more books this year in 2 days than I did all 3 days last year. So,
yeah, I echo the same thing. I sold more books in 1 day than I did all 3 days of the last con, and yeah, it's pretty amazing. But I don't know. I don't know if that accounts for everything, or people's willingness, or a heightened interest in readers that maybe we were, you know, had a better market share this time, or if it was just a different clientele. I couldn't put my finger on that, because it was still the same, you know, it's a movie centric, there's a movie film festival connected to the con, and that's kind of what I was attributing to that neck snapping and disinterest the first time around. But it's the same thing this time, and yet I don't know, there was definitely a heightened interest in books this time, there's no doubt about it, and the sales bear that out. I'm wondering, yeah. You know, the other thing too, we talked about this, Chuck mentioned people were getting drawn to my book covers. In particular, I have a co-written series with Armand Rosamilli called The Shocker. And, you know, it's got the funny Shocker, two in the pink, one in the snake thing, if you know that.
oh, my.
And the covers, they were drawing people in. I had this at the first one, and it definitely happened at the second one. People would point, look at it, go, ha, 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 that's great, and keep walking. And this time, that happened, too. And then I had a bunch of people snapping pictures, laughing, snapping pictures of it, texting it, and then walking away. To which my response was, I need posters, because these people are buying the book, but they love the art and they're getting a chuckle out of it. So maybe if I make some like mini posters or something, maybe we could sell something in that direction. Is that anything you guys have ever experienced? Not necessarily like they love your covers, but they're not buying the books, but like you're noticing an interest, but you're losing a sale just because they're not interested in books in some way, shape or form. And have you like thought of like, what else can I possibly merchandise with my books to help sales perhaps?
Yeah, I don't know what else you could do. I like the poster idea, you know, or postcard, like something that has the image that, you know, maybe it's a takeaway that somebody could put in their purse or in their pocket, take it home. And the more they look at it and kind of think about it, they go, yeah, you know what? It's pretty funny. I'm going to try it out. My favorite part, though, Mr. Frank, is the women. I got a kick out of watching the women who came by and looked at the Shocker, and not once, but twice, a very attractive woman came by, looked at it, snickered, and then tapped her boyfriend or her husband and like pointed it out to them. So you know that that guy has tried the move, and she was calling him out on it by pointing at the cover. So I loved that those women had to tell that, you know, like, huh, look, George, you're not the only one, you know, and I really found that humorous.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to market that, man. You need to get like some keychains, like some
Yeah, rubber gloves with, you know, like a brown finger and a couple of pink ones or something would work.
You know those rubber foam fingers that they hold up at like college football games? You need to get one of those.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's got to be some. I know there was a guy, or there was a vendor selling like pretty, I guess they were props. They were calling themselves like a prop artist, and they were selling like, you know, human hands. You know, they're all styrofoam or latex or whatnot. And I'm like, maybe I should get like one of those in the Shocker position, severed hands in the Shocker position, something, anything, because it's amazing the amount. I mean, it's not even at these cons. It's like anywhere that book is sitting out. It draws attention. It draws a laugh. It draws people to the table. You know, that very thing you're looking for, to get them to stop. And that's the thing. You can see them putting on the brakes and turning and looking at it. But there's just very little sales turnaround. Actually, I think the one sale that the Shocker got was, well, there were two, because there was somebody who actually had read the series and picked up two and three. But the one like cold sale the Shocker got from just stopping and appreciating it went to Chuck, because the person stopped to admire the book and then wound up buying one of Chuck's Halloween book.
Which,
Which is a beautiful segue into Chuck's unique sales technique. Experiencing Chuck at a convention or when we do the book signings at different places is a thing of beauty, because I've never seen a writer try so hard not to sell his work. And it's so much fun. But
I hate your guts.
I know you do. But Chuck, what you don't realize is that by trying to convince people not to buy it, you're piquing their curiosity and they have to have it. For instance, you have a series called the Gushers series, and you're forever telling people, like, they pick it up, it's a cool red cover and it's got a vampire look to it. It's a pretty cool looking book, just, you know, shopping on the table. So people are drawn to it to check it out. What's this about? And as soon as you're like, what's this one about? I'm interested in this book. Oh, you don't want that. There's a lot of sex in that. And there's a lot of violence and shit. And I don't know. As soon as you say that, I'm thinking to myself, no, that's exactly what I want. And time again, and even at this convention, that is exactly what I saw. There was a woman that came up, one of the vendors, and you were telling her about the book. And again, trying to talk her out of buying that book. And she's like, no, no, I can take this. That's the stuff I dig. And I had to step in and go, that is my favorite thing by Chuck, and I love it, and I recommend you get that. And that's what, like, she was like, yeah, you see that? And we had a joke about it. She was like, yeah, you were trying to talk me out of that.
Yeah, she called me on it, and which made it worse, because it was bad enough that I realized what I was doing too late into my non-sales pitch or my reverse sales pitch. And then for her to just closed caption it just made it worse.
It's true. It's rough, though. You know, I'll give you, to cap that story off, the book that the Shocker drew in and then ultimately Chuck made a sale on.
Oh,
there was a woman came over. She was definitely enjoying the bar that evening, I would imagine, by her demeanor. But she was like, you know, I'm just like looking for something fun and quick to read. She was drawn to your Halloween book because it is like a short little almost chapbook sort of size, it's a quick thing. And you had it on sale and she was interested in it. And she's like, I don't like big words. And Chuck stops and he goes, look at me. Do I look like the type of guy that uses big words? And she had a big, everybody had a big old laugh out of that. And I think that's when she just reached into her pocket, whipped out the money and put it down, and that was the sale right there. So, Chuck, I admire your sales technique by trying to tell everybody not to buy your stuff, or that you're just dumb and your stuff is not complicated to read.
The best part of that was when she commented on how short it was, and Chuck's like, oh yeah, you can read that in one shit.
It's another beautiful sales technique.
I didn't use the word shit, though. I said in one trip to the toilet, yes, I think. But
yes. You're a little more eloquent.
Yes. But that's basically what I meant. And yeah, she kind of batted her eyes at me like, okay.
But she still bought it, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, well, the money was already in my pocket, so she wasn't getting it back without a fight.
that is a fun measure of selling, though. I mean, really, to measure it and, like, yeah, you could put this away in a couple of trips to the bathroom. You could be done with this in a week and maybe a weekend when you really got time to think things out. Like, guy, there was a guy behind us selling stuff, and, you know, I don't mean to put nobody, everybody's got their whole thing, but he was, to me, just boring sounding. You know, we kept picking up on hearing his pitches to people, and to me, oh my god, it rung of like boring and droning, and like, how do you move any books like that? And then I'm like thinking, like, how are we not selling like a billion more books with Chuck telling everybody, oh, this is like a three turd book right here, man. And you can wipe yourself when you're done with it. It's not like you're gonna reread it, right?
I did tell her to do that. I said, and if you don't like it, you can clean up with it.
See that? It's multi-use, multi-purpose,
classy.
Hey, I was a Boy Scout. You know, I learned to make use of my resources no matter what.
Always prepared, Charles. Always prepared. I got to add, Charles, let's move the conversation forward. People I talk to, especially when I get done with these, a few times I've been able to talk to some bizarro guys who are sort of seasoned congoers. And one of the points that was hammered home is sort of like, if you're going to be doing these conventions, it seems pretty important to keep doing it. Keep showing your face at these conventions. Be a fixture. I'm kind of seeing how that bears out now that we've started going to these conventions where you not necessarily books, but the same vendors over and over again. And there's a sort of notoriety, not only amongst vendors, but against those hardcore con attenders that go to all these things. Are you picking up on the... you think it might be important to constantly be a fixture on the circuit, let's say?
Yes and no. I noticed some familiar faces from the New Jersey HorrorCon the first time around in April, and as well, the same people who were at New Jersey HorrorCon, not all of them, but a handful of them, were also at Scares the Care in Virginia, which I've found interesting. But we know, being Jersey people, that Scares the Care is very Jersey-centric for that convention or the charity weekend. So, I saw the same people, I guess, three times this year, and that was kind of interesting. However, none of them were book buyers or readers, and I know them by face and sometimes by the metal shirts or whatever that they wear, but they don't really stop at the table and check out the books, and they don't seem to buy them. But so from that standpoint, I think it's good to be to kind of get into a regular rotation and maybe not be a fixture, but be more recognizable. But at the same time, I think it's probably good to change things up every once in a while and not be too stale, try some different conventions and try out different places and states and whatever, and maybe even a different type of event altogether. Maybe not a horror con, but maybe a comic con or, a movie event that's strictly just movies or something.
Now, Tim, I got to ask you, we were all three of us at Scares at Care this past summer, of course, and we saw some, obviously, vendors. We ran into some vendors at the New Jersey Horror Con. They were also down in Virginia, and we saw, like, a guy was walking around with a Scares at Care shirt, and Scares at Care definitely had, people definitely knew what Scares at Care were. A lot of people sounded excited, definitely wanted to go, said they are going all in this coming summer. So to compare the two events, Scares at Care versus the New Jersey Horror Con, what sort of differences do you see in selling books between the two?
Well, it's hard to compare the two conventions because Scares at Care is really not, it is a convention, but I know they don't like to use that term because it's not really a convention. It's more of a benefit charity weekend. But as far as selling books, there's so many writers that go to Scares That Care, big name authors, that just everyone who pretty much goes to the convention is a reader. So the potential buyers are very reader centric. So that definitely helps. Whereas in NJ HorrorCon, like you mentioned before, everyone's there for the films, for the celebrities, for the other vendors. So it's harder to sell those people books than it is somebody who you know is a reader. So that would be the main difference.
I agree with you to a point, because some of what I noticed, at least this time, like we said, our sales were kind of not great at the first New Jersey Horror Con, but this time they were much better. And I can say I did better at the New Jersey Horror Con this year than I did at Scares of Care. I was having this conversation a bit with Chuck today. About, at Scares at Care, it is a very reader centric, very writer centric convention. Tons of readers, tons of writers attend. But because of that, there's also a lot of competition, a lot of share for people's dollars on books. And especially with Scares at Care, there's a celebrity room where there are both, movie Hollywood celebrities and writer celebrities. So as a normal, quote unquote, normal vendor in the vendor room with books, it just seems like a lot of added competition for those dollars that people walk in with. Do you think that's the truth, or you think there's just a lot of love to go around and Scares that Care for that?
I think there's just a lot of love to go around for Scares.
It's definitely hard, I think, to go up against, the Jonathan Jans and Brian Keens and Ron Malfies of the world. And then this year you have Wrath and Edward Lee. And, so I agree. I think that people kind of earmark more disposable income towards getting autographed books from the authors. But by the same token, we're competing with the best. The best of the best. So, it's very difficult. And when I say competing, it's friendly, obviously. Everybody is very supportive of each other. So, That's why it's great for New Jersey HorrorCon, because we clean up.
It's, well, yeah, at this time it really worked out. And there probably is a lot of credence we can give to the fact that we, you know, there were fewer book people selling there than the first time around. But I mean, also you got to consider, you had the, that scares the care this year. You had the celebrity writer room and all those big names, but don't forget we were in the vendor room and there were some big names in the vendor room right next to us. You had Bob Ford, you had Kelly Owen, you had Eric Shellman next to us. You had the people from Raw Dog or Devil Dog Press. There were a lot of bigger names there. There was Jay Wilburn and, of course, Tim Meyer across from our tables.
Thomas Watson, Patrick Lacy. Yeah, you know, Adam C. I mean, the list goes on.
The list goes on. There's a lot of, you know, outside the celebrity, there's still celebrities in the vendor room selling books. So, you know, and it did feel that way for me, Chuck, that, like, you know, that was our first year selling books at Scares. And, like, it's sort of like, especially amongst, you know, people who have been in it and writing and established names, we were very Johnny come latelys, and it's like, that's cute. What do you got? And all that stuff. And I definitely saw, like, you know, with Shellman on one side and Kelly Owen on the other, their readers were just coming up and just being like, what's new? Give me the new stuff. What don't I have? And it was like, it was just automatic sales for them, where I think it scares a care. We don't have enough of an established readership to have that kind of traffic. And that, I think that kind of harkens back to the, you know, showing your face constantly at conventions. If we do Scares at Care year after year, regardless of whether in a celebrity room or not, I think we'll start building that readership up in that venue and along that circuit. Agreed or disagreed, Chuck?
Yeah, I agree. And I think it lends a certain level of credibility as well, you know, because probably most readers don't get it that, you know, we sign up and we pay for a table and show up. So it's not that anybody can do it, but essentially anybody can do it, you know, if you get there early enough. And but in their minds, they may come and say, oh, well, these are the authors that are at the conventions or at the charity weekend. So, you know, they must be good type thing. And we are good. But, you know, I think that that kind of, it's almost like a stamp of approval, because you're there with the high level talent and the cream of the crop.
Yeah, you're still trying to get people to take that chance on you to show them, like, dude, just give me that one book, take a look at this, and you'll probably want to come back next year for more, I hope.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I offer oral sex to everybody that comes and checks out my books just because I will do anything for them to give it a try.
He's not joking either.
No, I don't doubt Chuck for a minute, but I try not to get that deep into his sales pitches. You know? What he does in the bathroom is up to him.
My tonsils are very pliable.
So before we get into the fun stuff, I do want to ask, like, both of you, I'll start with Tim. From here, New Jersey Con, and I say this sort of like, Tim and I had to, like, watch Chuck. Chuck gets down on himself easily. So, like, if we're not selling books constantly, Chuck's like, this fucking place sucks. And I'm just going to pack up. You know, it's Saturday night. We just sold two books. And because, like, it's been 10 minutes since the sale, Chuck's like, oh, fuck it. I hate this. I'm not writing anymore. And Chuck gets down himself easy. We got to give Chuck pep talks. And I had to convince Chuck to come back on Sunday. Tim was already too busy. He didn't, you know, he was already committed to Sunday. He couldn't come to the con. So I had to convince Chuck, like, dude, we're selling really good books. We're already selling better than the last New Jersey Horror Convention. And as long as the books keep going, man, let's just show up and do it. Like, you know, and as far as cons go, New Jersey Horror Con runs till 5 o'clock on a Sunday, which is a rare thing for conventions. So I'm like, you know, we don't even have to be in for that long haul. And we didn't, you know, nobody, really, I don't think anybody really makes it to 5 o'clock has been my experience. So we did bounce out. Like, but we made it to 3:30, which was pretty damn good, I think, because there was that much traffic going on. But, you know, there's sort of that vibe. Chuck has that vibe like, well, I don't know. I might be done with this con. So I want to ask, I'll pose it to both of you, but we'll start with Tim. Like, here we've done two New Jersey Horror Cons. We've done Scares at Care. We've done all these other signings. Do you continue with the convention scene, or do you think you want to sort of shift how you sell and market books moving forward?
I'm still on the fence about it. I mean, we've done, Chuck and I have done, and you too, have done so many conventions this year that it's kind of, I think I have to scale back. I don't think my body can handle it. And I don't think that it's really proving to be worth it every time. So I think after the season's over, I'll make a list and see which ones are really beneficial and which ones are doable, and maybe just do a couple a year and not do one every couple months like we've been doing. So that's my take on it. I don't know if Chuck feels any differently.
Yeah. Well, you know, not only are we authors, but we're business people too. So, you know, you have to look at the debits and credits on the ledger and kind of take everything into account and say, okay, you know, is this worth it? And I know from the show that I do with Armand Rosamilia, also here on Project Entertainment Network, the Mondo Method, as he yells at me and cajoles me all the time and tries to get me to improve my craft, you know, a lot of times you have to take stock in what's going on and pause and take a look at the sales, but also understand that when you go to these conventions or events, most likely you're not going to break even. So you kind of go with the goal in mind of gaining, you know, 3 to 5 new quote unquote loyal fans, somebody who will make, you know, personal connection with you at the table, kind of think that you're really cute, Tim Meyer, or that you're really funny, Frank Edler, or that you're just a hopeless sorrow case, Chuck Buddha, and you know they'll buy your books and they'll continue to read your stuff down the road after they give it a try. So, you know, I really do take that to heart when I do these shows, but at the same time, you got to look at it. You know, the budget dollars are very limited and or non-existent, and you kind of got to be smart. But yeah, I mean, the three of us have been on the road all year. I mean, we've done microbrew tours, microbrewery signings. We've done conventions, charity weekends. We've done a lot this year, and there's a lot to take in. And I think I may want to do something similar to Tim, where scale back a little bit next year and use some of those hard-earned dollars more towards, you know, ads and promotions and specific things that maybe I can pick up some new readers.
Yeah, I you're talking about it now, and you are right. I think all three of us kind of, we like just went full bore into it this year. Like, let's just do everything. Like, we got this stuff, this books now. And Tim, you know, I'm thinking about it. Like, before we kind of hooked up with you, I realized you had this writerly existence, like, before we kind of hooked up with you at last year's Scares at Care. So I don't know if you had done cons, you know, prior to last year's Scares at Care, but you know, it definitely feels like we like went full on. Let's do everything. Let's just show up everywhere and do as much as we freaking can. And I mean, you guys still have some conventions coming up too. I'm kind of done with my conventions for the year, but there's still some appearances we got going on. But it does seem like it was just like the battering ram. Let's just charge into this thing, kaboom! And now we're into September. We're 7-9 months into this, and there is sort of that, you know, like, ooh, here's the experience, and there's things that we could do better. There's things that might not be working that we thought would be cool. So it's true. Interesting on the reflection on scaling back, because, you know, especially you guys are like not New Jersey Horror Con. I feel like we're a decent presence there, especially since we got in on the ground level. I don't know that I'm necessarily willing to give it up just yet, but you do bring up good points. I mean, of course, doing conventions, it's a big investment. And you know, before I really went full bore into doing the writing and getting out there, this is the thing I heard from listening to all these authors talking to them, and is that, you know, it's like, well, every time it's, you know, you have to expect a loss going into conventions, and at best you're gonna, you know, basically break even, especially if you're traveling and taking in, you know, hotel rooms as part of your convention fees. So there is that stuff. I mean, we've done our best to keep those costs down, especially like you said, doing the microbreweries. The investment in that is considerably lower, and we won't get into details, but it is considerably less. It's sort of something we've tapped into it that works really well. And we can't deny the fact that doing those is might actually be better than the conventions. So it's sort of interesting to see which how the next year is going to go. And I know Chuck was talking today about this sort of thing, and he was mentioning like focusing more on advertising, putting his dollars as opposed to spending $200 or $300 on a table for a convention, using that money for advertising campaigns through whatever means, Facebook, Amazon, and whatever avenues there are for online advertising. Do you see your money maybe heading that way too, Tim?
Yes, definitely. I want to experiment with like Amazon and Goodreads and some of those sites to try and boost sales a little bit. But yeah, I mean, cons are an expensive endeavor. You, like Chuck said, you never really make your money back. And also the time that you're investing sitting behind the table for 8 to 9, sometimes 10 hours is brutal on the body. And if you're not making a lot of sales, it can be a little discouraging too. So it kind of hurts the ego. But yeah, so I like the idea of doing the one-day cons like Chuck and I did CT Horror Fest last week. And it was just a one-day event, and we actually did very well there, too. I think we sold probably more books in that one day than we did in all 3 days in NJ HorrorCon. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be, you know, pick and choose what we want to do and definitely maybe put some of that money back into some other areas.
Now, had you – I kind of posed, but I rambled on. Did you – before, like, say, last year's Scares of Care, when I first became aware of you, Tim – were you doing like conventions and stuff, or was like last year's Scares of Care sort of your first appearance?
Last year's Scares of Care was actually my first con ever behind the table. So that was the one that kind of started it all for me.
Right. So you're really like along the same path that Chuck and I are on as far as, you know, getting your selling your books and everything. And
oh yeah.
You definitely have that. That's cool. But that was a great point. I love that you guys had that Connecticut Horror Con and or just CT Con, whatever it was called. But the one day con, it's a rarity too, that one day con. But like you said, you know, you did great there selling, and it sort of rings of like what we do with the microbreweries. It's just a one off thing, a one shot deal. You're in and you're out, and your investment in time is small. And of course, a one day con table costs a lot less than a 3 day con table.
Yeah, and let's remember, too, that, you know, we're also helping to minimize our cost by splitting the table. So a lot of times it's either two of us or three of us. In Connecticut, we had four of us. So that helps to defray the cost, but it also makes the experience much more enjoyable because I love being with you guys. And quite honestly, if I never wrote another word and I just had these 10 or 12 books that I have and I was going to sell them, I would still want to be at the table with you guys every time because I love it. Like, we goof around, we have a good time, we people watch and make fun of people and stuff, and then you guys make fun of me, and you know, it's just a good time.
Mostly make fun of you.
Yeah, pretty much. I was trying to downplay it, but
It's a gorgeous point that you make, though, Chuck, about that sharing the table. Somebody, when I posted today, you know, hey, we're third day at New Jersey HorrorCon, and one of my writer's friends replied, like, hey, that's awesome. That looks cool. I wish I could do it, too, but the investment is so big. And I was like, you know what? I'm like, we're doing the, you know, three-way split on the table. Makes that cost a lot less, like you said, and you know, that was sort of already a lesson learned from the last New Jersey HorrorCon. You and Tim split a table, still a pretty good nut. And then I had the table basically by myself. Somebody shared it with me for a day, but that wasn't really, you know, much of a split. So the cost last New Jersey HorrorCon were a lot bigger and for a lot less sales. And it worked out a lot better this time. And we can also do all being at the same table. There's two points. And I noticed I noticed today when Tim dropped out, on Saturday when the three of us were there, that table looked gorgeous. It was end-to-end. There wasn't room for nothing else. It was just books. I was like, there's a fucking robust bookstore going on here.
And it looked like a library, yeah.
It looked real good, just crowded with books end-to-end. Nice and neat. It wasn't messy, but there was all books there. And it was a little more sparse. It was still pretty heavily loaded, and Chuck did the nice spread. He did everything set up before I got there, and it still looked nice and full. But, man, when Tim's books were all on the table, I thought that really looked, like, great. Like, there was a lot we had to offer. There was a lot of product out there. And I'm sure that had to do something to the eye of people walking around to, like, oh, look at all these books. Oh, my God, you know. A plethora of books to browse. That definitely helped. Whereas, like, when we did the first time, like Chuck was saying, like, I was at the table by myself with, you know, whatever, I had 5-6 books. It was a lot more sparse looking, and the guy behind, the same thing, the guy had 2 books on the table. He had all kinds of stuff, you know, just props and stuff on the table to kind of fill it up and draw the eye in. It was cool and everything, very thematic. But he still just only had 2 books on the table. So I think lots of books, all the writers, it helps you, and you're splitting the cost down. I mean, 4 writers, even better.
And even the thing that we learned from the Beers and Fears tour earlier this year, our willingness and ability to trust each other and split the sales, and I, you know, I'm not saying, like, whatever is purchased, it's split 3 ways, but we learned pretty quickly that if we post a sign and say, if you buy 1 book, it's 10, and if you buy 3, it's $25, you know, it gives people an opportunity to try one of Frank's, one of mine, and one of Tim's. And we actually see that pretty frequently, because people look, you know, they see the table, and it's all these books with great covers, and Sharkwater Beach, and Death Gets a Book, and, you know, First Cut, and oh my God, they all look so good, but I don't know which one to try. Well, you know what? Try one of each and see what you like.
Yeah.
And they do it, and it works really well, and it gives people that variety. It takes away some of the hesitation on the choice, and it keeps the sales flowing for the 3 of us. So I think that's been a key factor too to making things work for us.
That was a huge thing we learned this year when we did the Beers and Fears tour. And that was a bit of business by Mr. Armand Rosamilia. Of course, props to him, Armcast, Mondo Method, right here on the Project Entertainment Network. You too can learn all that cool shit. But yes, we all hooked up, and he brought up that, you know, that 3 for $25 deal. And how is, like, you know, we all got to be on board for this. But as long as you're on board, he goes, this will work. And it works exactly like Chuck said. People want to come up now. You know, you always have the person is there for Chuck or whatever, and they just want to grab the book. But there's people who want to read and sort of see everything there. It's that 3-4 that grabs them and is like, look, this one book cost you 10, but for $25, you get 3 books. And that opens them up to trying everything. And more times than not, like Chuck said, really more times than not, definitely 90% of the time, they're going to try out 3 of us. If they, you know,
at least 2 of us.
Yeah, New Jersey Horror Con, you know, we were getting really good split sales that way. And even, but there were 3 of us at the table. But even with the Beers and Fears, where there were 4 of us and a rotation of riders in and out, there was constantly everybody sampling everything. It's a great way. I mean, that's what you're doing. You're getting your books out there. You're trying to get new readers. We show up at these places we're not used to. They're new people all the time. They're new people when you show up at these places. So it's new readership, and it's giving them the opportunity to try everybody out or more people out. That has been the most brilliant. I think this year that 3-4 deal has been the most brilliant piece of marketing, bar none. And you do need that trust, and you guys have been awesome. We have that trust. It's real loosey-goosey. I'm sure the money hasn't been tabulated exactly correct, but we're all cool with it. I guess we all figure it all works out in the end. I think we're selling our books, and that's what makes us happiest. So if somebody gets bilked out of $5 this time because we didn't quite figure out the stuff quite right, so be it, because we're moving books really well that way.
Yeah, and let's be clear about it. The idea, I'm sorry, I'm going to get yelled at by my boss, it wasn't Armand's. It was Shelley, the lovely Shelley Rosamilia's idea to split it. And Armand is just the muscle behind the idea. And he basically comes and grabs you by the neck and goes, you're going to do this or you're off the tour. And then we go, okay.
Yeah. Well, anytime I say Armand came up with this idea, that's code for Shelley told Armand to do this. We all know that if you know the inner workings of the Armand Rosamilia-Shelley Rosamilia relationship. It's really, you know, like any good any classic relationship, she's the brains of the operation.
And she's the accountant too. So when she's with us, there is no money mistakes or anything else, and it's a well-oiled machine, and we sorely miss her anytime she's not here in New Jersey with us.
Every time we've done something without Shelly, it's been like, this would have been really awesome if Shelly were here, but instead it's just a really cool time. But we're screwed. Like I said, I gypped you out of $8 today because I had like 25 in my pocket. I'm like, shit, I forgot to give him that. So, but like, we're all cool and it's all going to work out in the end because we're all good. You know what I mean? And we all sold those books right. So I'm digging on that. I gotta bring up, we're getting close to the end. So, but I gotta bring up to make this bizarre. I gotta bring up the bizarro moment of the con. And that was on Saturday. A lovely lady came up to our table. Tim get the, you know, what are you into? You like reading? Yeah, what are you into? And she said the buzzword that I was sort of like a deer in headlights. I was like trying to process, did I just hear that word? She said, I'm into bizarro. And I'm standing there like, did she just say bizarro? Does somebody just say bizarro? And while I'm trying to process that, I get Tim and Chuck like at the same exact moment just pointed at me. There's bizarro right there, pointing at Mr. Frank. And so that was an awesome
moment.
Yeah,
we didn't even say a word. We just pointed at you.
Yeah, it was just like a what do you call it? Just a gut reaction. Just the fingers went up, pointed at me. I heard the word bizarro. Well, I was trying to process, like, holy shit, somebody said bizarro? Because that's always my reaction. So it was awesome. Yeah, she was into bizarro. She's just getting into bizarro. She was currently reading a Jeremy Robert Johnson book. And was digging it and what she's read so far. So I pointed her. I rattled off my list of names to check out. And I sold her Scared Silly. And I hope that's Rebecca. Rebecca with a K-A-H out there. Hashtag Flat Satan on Instagram. You see a picture of Rebecca with Flat Satan and Scared Silly. And talk to Rebecca. Let her know all the good stuff that is bizarro out there. That was a really cool. I always get excited when there's bizarro people because it's just such a rarity. And I'm just heartened by the fact that, you know, you find those straight people out there that say bizarro. So that was really awesome.
Yeah, she was fired up about it. And the cool thing is you know, that should be a message to the bizarro community. Hey, that there's a market. You know, they need to be represented at Scares That Care Charity or at Connecticut Horror Fest or New Jersey Horror Con because people are interested in that stuff. I mean, I'm a horror author and I read horror, but I also read bizarro. And, you know, it's no secret that pretty much every guest you have on Bazong, I end up buying their books and reading them. So, you know, seeing a bizarro table at New Jersey Horror Con next time, I think would be a good idea.
It would be definitely awesome to see, you know, especially out here on the East Coast. I was really happy to see it at Scares That Care this year. Big, heavy, bizarro presence. And I hope it only gains it. To see a bizarro table at New Jersey Horror Convention or anywhere here in my home garden state would be wonderful. But just, I love to continue preaching that word. I want to thank you guys for coming on the show today. I know you're not normally bizarro guys, but you all got that bizarro vibe, and we had a really bizarro weekend with Troma, singing karaoke with Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD, and Chuck selling his weird books. And it's an honor to work with you guys selling books time after time, and I look forward to more book selling events. We do have some more coming up in November. We're going to be at a brewery, so keep an eye out for all of us there. But this, our time is up here on Bazong, unfortunately. So I, you know, just really thank you, Tim Meyer. Check out his stuff. It's he's got the weird. Trust me on this. It's the weird. I love the Sunfall stuff. I'm thinking the Thin Veil is kind of like some weird monster shit going on.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff in that. That's basically like Stranger Things meets Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So yeah, it's a little out there.
Yeah, say no more, right? I mean, to me, like when I watch something like, you know, The Thing, it's a big, huge like 80s horror movie. But to me, that's like, I mean, The Thing, what the fuck do you, there's no horror monster like that, like before or since, really. That thing is, it's just wacky. And that screams of sort of, it has that bizarre thing to me. And I think that's sort of like what Tim's got. He's got that little bizarre quirk to his horror monsters. And Chuck is just a bizarro guy.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I'm just weird, but at least my parents taught me how to cover my fucking mouth when I have SARS. So I don't spread the plague to everybody within reach, okay? I thought we were going to talk about people at this convention and about some of the fucked up stuff that happened. Well, shut the fuck up!
Tim brought up our fatigue, the fatigue you experience from a convention weekend. And there is no doubt that fatigue comes with, we were out on Saturday night after the convention. We went to a restaurant, and across from us is this little kid, and he is like, he's having
hacking
like Captain, it's like Captain Trips moment, and he's just hawking away, and Chuck is getting so upset. We had such a laugh riot. Chuck getting upset that the kid
was a germaphobe, though, so that's what made it really funny. He was like freaking out.
Yeah, he had a bail out.
The kid's just hacking. And the parents aren't doing anything to stop
him. No, they're looking around, you know, oh, this kid is great. Yeah, he's fucking great. He's getting everybody deathly ill in this place. He's spewing sputum all over the table and stuff, not covering. Nobody says a word to him. And we're walking outside the building. You could still hear him through the glass window choking all over the table.
I laughed so hard that I almost threw up.
Yeah,
please pick up a fucking parenting book once in a while.
Tim's feeling under the weather. I woke up this morning with like a tickle in my throat, and I was kind of choky this morning after I had my coffee, and I'm like, don't fucking tell me this kid gave everybody a plague. But I also heard, didn't somebody else say they were getting a touch of, they were insane. It wasn't the girl next to us like saying she wasn't feeling all that wonderful. It's like just sick people walking around a convention.
It's con crud. You get it almost after every con that you go to. You just feel like shit the next morning.
That's
man. There were some people hacking at the place too, but I don't know if they're smokers or not, because you know,
it's also the beginning of flu season though, so there's that.
Great. God, just making this wonderful.
Oh yes, so great note to end on.
Well, at least I know what this episode is going to be called. It's going to be called Con Crud. It's a wonderful, it's a wonderful thing. So thank you guys once again for helping me wrap up the second New Jersey Horror Convention. I had a ball doing business with you guys, selling books out there, and hopefully we reap the rewards of that in the aftermath. Don't forget, people, I hate to do this, but I have to ask sometimes, if you read the book, try and go review it. Just drop a note on Amazon or in Goodreads anywhere. I know you placed your hard-earned money. As far as I'm concerned, you gave me your hard-earned money, and that's all we expect out of you. But, like, it would be awesome. It's awesome. I love that Tim, every time Tim made a sale, he said, and let me know what you think of the book. Like, and that's not even asking for anybody to go to Amazon or anything. It's just, like, reach out to me and let me know if you dug the book. That's all we kind of ask for, is that just little bit of feedback. Did you like it? Did you hate it? Did you think it was awesome, but you forgot to write the subplot in? That type of stuff. And of course, yes, the shut the fuck up. So I wanna let's go out on that. Tim and Chuck, thanks for joining Bazong this week.
Thank you, sir.
And shut the fuck up.
They're the Awesongers, Mr. Tim Meyer, Mr. Chuck Abuda. If you want some recommendations, some personal recommendations from me, Mr. Frank, on where to pick up, what to pick up from those guys. For Tim Meyer, you're going to want to check out In the House of Mirrors. It was a hot seller at the New Jersey Horror Con. He sold out of, he did a new updated version of the cover, completely sold through them and got into his older copies, his first run copies of those as well. Big interest on that book, In the House of Mirrors by Tim Meyer. And for Chuck Buddha, you're going to want to read, I just finished it, I thought the world of it, probably his best work to date, Chuck Buddha's The First Cut, book one of the Gusher series. Really cool, Suki Stackhouse, occult type stuff, teenagers dabbling in ritualistic occult kind of stuff. Pretty cool, pretty disturbing stuff. That's from Chuck Buddha. Check those two out from those fine writers, or anything they write, because they're really cool guys, and I think they're pretty talented fellows as well. And Zongers, hey, New Jersey Horror Con is done, and we move on. We got matters of selling t-shirts. If you were looking through the photos of the New Jersey Horror Con I was putting up, Mr. Tim Feely, sporting his Bazong shirt at the New Jersey Horror Con. Thanks, Tim Feely, for sporting and supporting the Project Entertainment Network and Bazong. You know why? Because he went on to projectentertainmentnetwork.com, clicked on the shop banner. There he found all the cool-ass Bazong swag available for purchase, including his gorgeous red Bazong t-shirt. I thought it really popped out, really looked good. I had him parading around the entire con, sporting Bazong wear, letting the world know Bazong rules, especially my new friend, I hope, has listened. I told her all about it. Rebecca, our newly found friend, a bizarro friend, and a big fan of Jeremy Robert Johnson. Don't forget to check out Bazong, not only this episode, but all the episodes to find out where you can read other really good, great bizarro work, as all the other Zongers know. And with that in mind, Zongers, don't forget you can support us on Patreon with the Project Entertainment Network Patreon page. For just as little as $1 a month, you get value-added content from all the shows on Project Entertainment Network, including Bazong, where I do a video Bizarro Book Spotlight, another great way for Rebecca and all you other Zongers to check out and find out about new specific works of Bazong, with the little added torture of seeing me in the flesh doing so. And I'm going to have a new one real soon, as I just read a killer, killer Bizarro book. So those are all the cool things Bazong's got going on. Of course, I thank you for tuning in this week. Don't forget to tune in all the following weeks. And if you're behind, don't worry about being behind. You don't have to listen in order. Just pick up, now, and then you can go back at will. But just always try and stay as on top of Bazong as you can. And I thank you for listening, no matter how you do listen, Zongers. So until next time, you are now free to go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network podcasts.
Three guys with beards.
The usual gang of idiots. That's me, Christopher Golden.
New York Times best-selling authors.
My name is Jim Moore.
Interviews with pop culture stars and creators.
So I'm Jonathan Mayberry.
And they don't talk about politics.
Course of Human Events.
Jesus, let's not talk about the Course of Human Events today.
I said they don't talk about politics.
I suspect we may bend our rule about no politics on the beards and talk about politics on the beards.
Didn't you say they don't talk about politics?
If somebody else says something, we should...
Thank you.
Can anyone hear me? Am I all alone here?
Three guys with beards.
Tuesdays, exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
Once upon a time, a madman, poet, and thief, known as John Urbansick, that's me, challenged himself, myself, to write a story a day, every day, for a year, by hand. Some of them worked. Some of them failed. Some of them were spectacular. Then I did it again. Join me every week for Ink Stains as I do it a third time. And I will read you some of these stories. I'll talk about the process, about creativity in general, writing in specific, and maybe I can help ignite your artistic adventures.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.